324-0134, Daniel Scandiff, appellant versus Elizabeth Scandiff, appellee.
Mr.
Good morning,
Thollander.
Yes, good morning. David Thollander on behalf of the appellant, Daniel Scandiff, Sr.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Polinsky, PCO, LINSKI, on behalf of Elizabeth Scandiff.
You may proceed, Mr. Thollander.
If it may please the court, for the record, my name is David Thollander. I represent the plaintiff, Daniel Scandiff, Sr., in the matter that was brought against his now former daughter-in-law, Elizabeth Scandiff, as a result of a series of statements that the defendant, appellee, made to her mother and her two brothers, Daniel Gago, mother being Stella Gago, Daniel Gago, and John Gago. The real issue before the court is a simple one. Whether or not statements made to Stella Gago, Daniel Gago, and Robert Gago were publications within the definition or meaning of defamation. The matter proceeded to trial, and there were roughly seven witnesses that gave testimony. At the conclusion of plaintiff's case in chief, the defendant, appellee, moved for a directed finding. Judge Cerny indicated, Neil Cerny, granted that motion, finding that the statements made to DCFS, the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office, the DuPage County investigators, DCFS investigators, and the Villa Park Police Department were privileged. Court went on to say that it found that those statements to those agencies and entities were not publication. The problem, however, is that plaintiff did not sue Elizabeth Scandiff based upon statements made to DCFS, its investigators, the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office, or the Villa Park Police Department. And the action arose from statements that the defendant made to mom and her two brothers. And when the court rendered its decision, I asked whether or not the court is ruling or deciding on whether the statements made to mom and the brothers were defamatory. And the court indicated it found that the statements were not publications. Respectfully, that's simply erroneous. As defined in case law, as well as the restatement second of torts, any utterance is a publication. It is beyond dispute that the defendant told her mother that my client got in the bathtub naked with his four-year-old grandson and then proceeded to stick, according to the defendant, a flashlight up his anus. That did not occur. She testified that she told her mother that claim, and her mother verified at trial that she was told, quote, what little Danny had said. Now, defendant's reported defense, is really twofold. That the defendant didn't really believe these statements. That's not an element of defamation. Whether she believes it or not is irrelevant. She made the statement. Any utterance is a publication. Defendant also maintains that, well, she was just repeating what little Danny, a four-year-old, told her. Well, as the appellate court has ruled, and defined in Illinois law, that the repeating an utterance isn't self-defamatory. And the appellate court indicated, I believe it out of the first district, that the faithful retelling of the utterance is actually more damning. And so the mere fact that that the defendant is repeating allegedly what little Danny is telling her is not an offense. It's not a defense to defamation, and it's actionable. Moreover, the statements that were made and attributable to little Danny at trial are seriously suspect. As set forth in the record on appeal and the testimony given by mom, dad, Daniel Scandiff Jr., as well as Donna Scandiff, the grandmother, and Dan Scandiff Sr., the grandfather, the child had developmental disabilities. They couldn't communicate his thoughts. At age four, there was testimony that he couldn't communicate thoughts. Yet the defendant's attributing this child telling her that grandpa and himself got in the bath naked, that a flashlight was stuck up the grandpa's rear end, apparently, that grandpa slapped the child and said, "Bitch, I don't like you." There was also statements that the child allegedly told mom, who repeated the statements, that they had naked dance parties, that the child was hit with a hammer in the rear end, and that grandpa exposed himself. Now, this child could not, had the inability to communicate such claims. And ironically or remarkably, these claims were only made to mom. Dad was never told, or the child never told dad any of these claims, nor did the child reveal any of these claims to anyone else other than mom. And these are despicable, deviant claims that are per se defamatory. The testimony also revealed by Dan Scanda Senior, I'm sorry, Junior, that this matter eventually
resulted Mr. Thalander, you're a little bit all over the world here on some things. Let me focus and ask this question. You're going to determining whether it's defamatory, right, by these statements, whether the statements That's themselves correct. Are defamatory. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the details which you have presented of these statements, is that necessary, or how about just saying abuse, physical abuse or sexual abuse without any details? Is that defamatory?
The reason I indicated what I indicated is this is what she told her mom and her brother. And I don't want to soft pedal or suggest that the statements weren't so damning and deviant that it may be looked upon as not being per se. Plaintiff has maintained that these statements by the defendant are per se defamatory. My apologies for going into detail, but regrettably, these are things that she said. And these are things she said to her mother and her brother. Respectfully, the mere utterance by the defendant to her mother and brothers is a publication. And so we can essentially stop now and respectfully overturn the trial court's decision because they are a publication. The court never held that statements to mom and brothers was a privileged statement. And of course, the court never went on to indicate what type of privilege and whether or not that privilege has been abused. The defendant would like this court to assume such statements are absolute privilege, and that's simply not the case. The defendant has also claimed that the statements by the husband that were made to him by the defendant, which she repeated in the presence of the husband to law enforcement individuals, is an absolute privilege, and it's simply not. It may be waived, and at trial we maintained that it was waived. The crux of this matter boils down to the statements that the defendant made, whether she repeated them or not, or made them up. Those are defamatory, and those are publication. And we would ask that the appellate court reverse the trial court's decision. The facts of this case are no doubt troubling. The statements being made and attributable to mom, to the child, against grandpa, are damning. Mind you, there were three DCFS complaints that mom made at different times over the course of roughly 8 months. Each one of those was deemed unfounded, and mom admitted telling the brothers and mom of the investigations. It's illogical to suggest that she didn't go into detail, but at a minimum, she admitted telling mom and brothers about the bathtub issue. She's also admitted in her answers to interrogatories, which is an issue that was somewhat challenged at trial, that these admissions in her answers in her interrogatories 2 and 3, in which she's admitted that she told her brothers that my client exposed himself to the child and that the child was sexually abused, physically abused, molested, were told to mom and brothers. And as such, that is a publication. And those statements are not privileged. There's no basis for maintaining privilege. And the trial court never ruled on that. The trial court ruled that the statements were not a publication. So it's a fine line. It's a fine line that's definitive. The case law is crystal clear as to what is and isn't a publication. I would like to offer the following as well, and I'm sure John will be presenting his argument. There is a contention that statements to the repeating statements of another aren't defamatory. Well, that's not the law in Illinois. It's not the law anyway. The defendant is also asking this appellate court to overrule this district court's decisions on defamation, every other district decisions on defamation, and at least three Illinois Supreme Court rule decisions on defamation, holding that the defendant would have to believe the statement for it to be actionable. That's not the law in Illinois. It's not the law anywhere. The mere fact that she repeated these statements that our plaintiff maintains are per se defamatory results in an actionable event against this defendant. And the mere fact that she repeated it yet again is itself defamatory. There's no privilege here. Defendants also would like to impose privilege on these statements of mom and brothers, cites no case authority that would recognize these types of statements to mom and brothers would be a privilege. And of course, what privilege would that be? Would that be absolute or conditional? And if it's conditional, it certainly wouldn't be absolute. That privilege can be waived by way of additional action. So in essence, the appellant is asking this court to overturn Judge Neil Cerny's decision and remand this matter for a new trial on the merits. Judge, I can't hear you.
Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. You haven't addressed the case of Kuick versus Starmark?
Is that cited by the appellee?
No.
No.
Okay. It's cited by you under standard of review, Mr. Thollander.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. There is a two-pronged approach to determining whether or not a directed finding should be issued. The first prong requires the trial court.
That's not what he asked.
Yeah. Yep. We're talking about conditional privileges, aren't we?
I was of the impression you were looking at or asking about jurisdiction. Conditional privilege, if I can address that. First, the court never ruled that the statements to mom and brothers were a privilege. Never ruled that. So it's not. But if the court's going to take that up, the testimony that was established, parenthetically, the defendant cites no cases whatsoever, other than the restatement second of torts, that a statement could be privileged, it's a conditional privilege, and then it could be waived by way of conduct and acts. First, the trial court never addressed the privilege and whether it was privileged, but it's extent this court is going to embrace the issue. There is ample testimony contained in the record that the motivations behind this defendant's statement was her animosity and displeasure with the relationship that her husband had with his parents. And that's evidenced by the testimony of Karen Graziano, which painfully went through a course of time in which the defendant shared with Karen her displeasure, anger, hatred, annoyance that Dan Jr. would talk to his parents, that his parents would stop by and drop off food or stop by and help Dan Jr. with home projects. There was a motivation behind this that, to the extent the court's going to consider a privilege, it's damned by way of what the defendant did. She sought to destroy the relationship by way of proffering and publishing terrible statements against my client, the grandfather of, at the time, a four-year-old. A four-year-old who couldn't communicate well and certainly expressed his thoughts and ideas. Yet, according to the defendant, she's the only one that he told, and she was simply repeating it. The evidence at trial reflects that this matter should be reversed, that a new trial should be awarded, and that the matter proceed accordingly.
Any questions from the court?
I do
no
not.
Questions.
Judge, I'm sorry, we can't hear you.
Cannot hear you, Bill. Something's going on.
No. Okay, can you hear now?
A little bit.
Barely, but yes.
Okay. Well, you can hear well enough to know you'll have time in reply. And Mr.
Polinsky. You can skip the C, Justice.
I can skip the C. Very good. Thank you.
That's as close as you get in English. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. You may respond. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is John Polinsky. I represent Elizabeth Scandiff. I apparently was at a different trial than Mr. Tholander was. As I recall the testimony from, and now that we're limited to the publications to Ms. Scandiff's mother and brothers, the direct testimony from Ms. Scandiff was that her brothers were advised that there was an investigation. She did not testify that she told them any of the details of the statements that her four-year-old son was making about his grandfather. In fact, the whole issue with regard to the interrogatories is a question of whether or not, in answer to general interrogatories, which ask for broad categories of questions, she should somehow be stuck with an admission that she went into great detail with the people with whom she spoke.
Mr. Polinsky, where's the line drawn?
Where's the line drawn in terms of whether that's an admission?
No, I mean the interrogatory, okay, and then her testimony at trial.
Well, I think the line is drawn with her direct testimony at trial, because during the discovery process, what you're looking for is general categories of information. And then when Mr. Tholander elicited direct testimony from the witness, my client, she told him specifically what she said to whom. And then he sought to impeach her with interrogatory answers that were prepared during the course of discovery. And I think even if that is an admission, it would be an evidentiary admission, and the trial court, in weighing the testimony versus that admission, is not bound by an evidentiary admission. The trial court is able to, having seen the testimony of the witnesses, to disregard that admission or to not be bound by it. And I believe, I don't have the citation for that for right now. What I can tell the court is I don't believe that Judge Cerny was absolutely required to say, well, that's an admission that she said these specific things to these particular people, when Mr. Tholander had elicited from her on direct testimony exactly what she had said to whom. I don't think it was even a proper impeachment.
Well, let's stay away from the impeachment. I'm kind of curious, where's the line drawn? Is it defamatory to say that allegations of abuse, is that sufficient, or do you have to go into these details?
Well, I don't think you have to go into these details. I think where the crux of my case, Mr. Justice, is that these statements to everyone to whom she made them were privileged under the analysis where she's the mother of a young child. The child has an interest in being protected. She has an interest as her mother of protecting the child. The public in general has an interest in protecting children from potential abuse. And it's not as if she was running around to the entire world discussing this matter. She was talking to trusted people in law enforcement, her mother, the same kind of person I would go to in seeking advice on how to raise my children. I'm sure the same type of person you would have gone to while raising your children.
So you're basically citing to me Kuick, right?
I am. I think it's a privilege.
So
I think it's
your
a privilege
position
that she did not abuse.
All three situations in Kuick would apply. That's what your theory is.
That is exactly what my theory is, and I cited Kuick as well for that purpose. I think that this is a situation where we have to allow people to communicate what they're hearing from young children of a tender age, because those kinds of comments from that child are concerning. Now, Mr. Tholander alluded to his not very well to a theory that this is somehow made up. It wasn't argued at court or trial that these statements were not uttered by young Danny. We had the testimony of the psychologist, Dr. Shapiro, who testified that he didn't think that necessarily that that they were fabricated by Mrs. Scandiff, that he thought that the child may have made fanciful statements, but he didn't testify that these were made up.
Where does that fit in this analysis of defamation in this case?
I think it fits into the analysis because if you have a privilege under Kuick, and then the next question is whether or not that privilege has been abused. Has she talked to somebody, or does she actually know that it was, in fact, not true? Now,
what did Judge Cerny find on that issue?
I'm not sure if Judge Cerny reached it all together that way, as is often the case when
so
one is.
We don't have a finding as to that issue.
I don't think he made an explicit finding. That's correct. And I will tell the court.
Did he even do an addressing of that issue?
Not in his oral comments. That's correct. But that doesn't preclude an appellate court from affirming for reasons which appear of the record.
But isn't that a fact issue?
Whether or not the privilege was abused? I think this court can rule based upon the testimony that it was not abused, because this case was not going to get any better had Elizabeth Scandiff taken the stand on her case in chief to say, this is what I told people. We all know what she told them. She told them what she heard from her son.
And certainly a finding of no publication.
And I will tell the court that there are many times where I read a transcript of a proceeding where I've been involved and I think, gosh, I wish I sounded more articulate in writing than I thought I did in orally. But I still think that the evidence that shows up in the report of proceedings shows that she did not publish this in a way which would abuse a privilege. And I think this court can find as a matter of law that these communications were privileged. And I think this court can find that based upon the testimony, that privilege was not abused. And I don't think it has to go back to Judge Cerny, who unfortunately is no longer in that calendar. So we'd have to start over from scratch with a brand new judge. But that's neither here nor there. I don't think that should enter into this court's consideration. I think we have, plain and simple, a privilege that attached, and we have, plain and simple, no abuse of it. She spoke to really, now apparently Mr. Tholander says, it doesn't involve talking to the police, DCFS, or law enforcement. It only involves talking to mom and brothers. And the clear testimony as to the brothers was, gosh, they knew there was an investigation going on. I didn't go into detail. And as to mom, this is what little Danny said. And although Mr. Tholander has a theory that these statements were somehow fabricated by my client, there was no direct testimony that happened. And although Mr. Tholander has a theory that Danny could not have communicated these thoughts, there are two issues there. One is that the father of this child admitted that he could communicate with the child. My client had said that she could understand what this child said, and Mr. Tholander, even though he's attached it as an exhibit to his reply brief, includes a pretrial statement that has a discovery disclosure that says that the father had videos, plural, of his discussions with little Danny, which weren't weren't proffered at trial. My suggestion there would be that's because those videos would have belied the suggestion that he can't communicate.
Okay, Mr. Polanski, if someone says and publishes a statement that you are under investigation for abuse of your grandchild, is that defamatory?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll concede that what she said was a difficult thing for anyone to hear. I concede that there was a prima facie case.
I'm just talking with that statement, not all these details that you are both getting into.
Well, fortunately, I haven't had to repeat the details, but yes. I think I would agree that he's under investigation for abuse. Absolutely. That would be defamatory.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
I really don't have anything to add except for I think the record clearly shows that these were privileged communications and the privilege was not abused. It's not like she was running around town telling everybody. She was talking to trusted family members, not in great detail as to two of the three. And to her mother, as it related to the well-being of her son, Danny Jr., or little Danny.
Okay. Questions from the court?
None.
I don't have any.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Polinsky. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Tholander, you may reply.
Thank you, Judge. Well, first of all, I would agree with Mr. Polinsky. We apparently were at two different trials, but the facts are the facts, and the report of the proceedings clearly indicates what transpired. I'm glad to hear that the appellee, the defendant, is acknowledging that a statement that you're under investigation by DCFS is defamatory, because she told her brothers that, both brothers, and she told their mother that. So there is, by admission by the defendant, of a defamatory statement. As to the contention that the videos, respectfully, that is a red herring. Counsel served a 237 notice during the course of the trial that I never saw, in which he asked for the production of those videos. He had them. He had them. And I don't need to produce them. I don't need to use them, because the testimony is crystal clear. And if counsel wanted that those videos, he had them, or he could have raised an issue at the trial level. He never did. That issue is waived. There's a contention that the court should embrace the privilege. Judge Cerny never dealt with the privilege. And that's a question of fact. And Judge Oldenbridge, you've identified that, and that's a bullseye. Quick indicates that. That it's a question of fact as to whether the privilege, a privilege, has been abused. And Judge Cerny never ruled on that. And he never ruled on the issue, in essence, of whether or not a false statement to DCFS, to investigators, to Village Villa Park Police Department would be still privileged. And it wouldn't be. But yet again, that's a factual issue that needs to be addressed by the trial court, and respectfully not by this court, because it's a factual issue. I don't have a theory of the case. I know the facts. And the facts are that mom made these statements. Mom attributes them to little Danny, a four-year-old. But that's not a defense. Repeating statements to her mother, and then telling her brothers that that Dan Scandiff Sr., the grandfather, is under investigation, hits a bullseye in this case for the plaintiff, and that this matter needs to be reversed. The judge, again, Judge Cerny never dealt with the issue of the statements made to mom and brothers, other than, well, it's not a publication. And we know, respectfully, that's simply wrong. It's simply wrong. The utterance is enough. Respectfully, there is no privilege here, but to the extent the court is concerned or needs to or desires to address that issue, that compels the matter to be reversed and sent back to the trial court. And regrettably, we start all over in a trial. But that's why we're here. And that's why there's appellate court and a Supreme Court, so that matters can be addressed fully and completely with a clear understanding of what transpired, and that the respective rights of the litigants are protected. One other item. Defendant wants to portray the statements in the interrogatories 2 and 3 as, well, maybe they're admissions, but they're not binding. That is simply not the law. As set forth in Kovac versus Barron, a case that cited in the brief, statements, answers to discovery are judicial admission. So her answers to interrogatory 2 and her answer to interrogatory 3 are judicial admission as a matter of law. And both interrogatories asked, did you make these statements and to whom? And she acknowledged that. And so we have a clear situation where there has been defamatory statement. On an aside, counsel has admitted that the mere statement under investigation is sufficient, which would warrant this court to return the matter to the trial level for a retrial. Respectfully, I thank the court for hearing my arguments and entertaining my thoughts.
Okay. Questions from the court?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this morning. It will be taken under advisement. A written disposition shall issue.